That was a long one. Just have to stretch it out. So you may be wondering, why so much John, right? Well, John doesn't have John's own year in the three-year cycle of the church, right? We've got a year for Matthew, the teacher, a year for Mark, and a year for Luke, and they get all scattered in throughout the course of their own given years. John does not have John's own year, and so we pack a ton of John into these festival seasons, so you can thank the lectionary planners for that. Because it's really dense. And I don't know about you, but about 99% of what we just heard went completely past me, as it does anyways. But particularly on a day where I get to sit up here and watch art being made up front, which is a treat. So if you haven't watched that, get a vantage point to do it, because that's what happens in the midst of our attempts to worship. God shows up and draws things. So, I wonder if you can recall for yourself who the God is that you first fell in love with. Who was that God that you first fell in love with? How did that God sound? How did that God act? How did that God show up? How did that God console? How did that God challenge? Who was that God you first fell in love with? Chances are pretty good that that God, while there may be golden threads, looks very different. Maybe not as many different people as we've got here, but probably pretty close. Each of us has that original experience of a God who showed up in our lives, that God who showed up, called us from death to life, who drew us out of whatever tomb we may have found ourselves in. Each of us has that God, and it's important not to take that God for granted. It's important to revisit as much of that God as we can, to go read back over the original love letters, to think back, to remember whatever the surprise was, or the tenderness, or the experience of joy, the experience of wonder, of new beginnings. It's vitally important that each of us take responsibility for that relationship. I know the God that I first fell in love with was the God who found me and my family when we had been asked to leave the church of my birth when my folks divorced. You see, because in that faith community, who were all really good people, salt of the earth folks, but they had a particular script about the God that they had agreed was the God of their community, and that God script didn't have room in it for kind of the mess of a divorce. They didn't know what to do with that. Somewhere in their own scripting, they had forgotten that perhaps their lives were a mess at one point too, that perhaps their lives didn't fit a script that had been prescribed for them. They had forgotten that. And so having forgotten that, as a community, what they drew up for themselves was a sort of a codified God, a God who does this, 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 and this, and never does anything else. And there's a sweetness to that. I can appreciate that in their efforts to distill the various love letters that everybody showed up with, what they wanted was to find sort of a common rule by which they could all agree, okay, despite the diversity of our experiences, there is this kind of one straight, tight, narrow little golden thread, and that little golden thread is is pretty rigid, but at least we agree to it. We agree to it. It's the norm that holds us together, right? For that faith community, it became not only their set of rules, but the set of rules kind of narrowed their theological possibilities. And by having a fairly tight, narrow theology, it narrowed their capacity to see and to perceive the possibility that God might function in ways outside of that. It narrowed their theological vision. And while I could be mad about that, it just mostly makes me kind of sad. It breaks my heart. It breaks my heart that that happens all the time. It happens all the time. That while we do our absolute best to put to language, and as much as possible to put to a set of norms, how it is that God shows up in our lives, and we do that for very good reason, right? I mean, that is how we hand it off to the next generations, for example. You can't just hand off mystery and say good luck. One has to hand off a certain set of stories to say, well, God kind of did this one time, and then God did this other time, and it kind of made sense here, and then it blew the roof off here. You have to have something to hand off, and that's where we come in. We have to decide what we're going to hand off, right? And we run the risk of handing off too narrow and too rigid a theology if we don't first do the hard work of going back to our original love. To go back to the surprise of it. To go back to the uncertainty and the unboundedness of it. The joy and the delight. That energy we would stay up late for or wake up early for. We have to go back to that because it keeps us fresh. It keeps us responsive. It keeps our imaginations alive to the possibility that maybe God is still showing up in new ways today. And it's our work to do. We've got a story today that tells us what happens to a community that hasn't done that hard work, right? And these are good, fantastic people. These are the people I grew up with. Right? These are the people who loved me from birth until 6. Actually loved me till through prepubescence. I was there till 10. So you know these are good folk, right? They loved me all those years, nearly a decade. They handed off to me all sorts of really helpful stuff. Here's how God acts. Here's what God does. Here's who's in. Here's who's out. Here's what you can predict if you do this or if you do this. Helpful. Right, in some ways, is a starting point helpful, but what they didn't have was the capacity for something more, right, for the God of surprise and wonder. And we've got this story today about what happens when surprise shows up, right? And this kid, who everyone around knows was blind, clearly by some edict of God, because they've made sense of it already, and yet, that kid all of a sudden can see. And they don't have a framework for it, right? It's an absolute violation of everything they've come to believe about themselves and the God who is their God. They don't have anything to do. They don't know what to do. They're dumbfounded. And so their default position, for understandable reasons, their default position is to dig into the details. Right? We do this when we're anxious. We don't risk willingly without information. What we want to make sense of this mystery is data. Sound familiar? All right, God, I'll do it. I'll say yes. I'll get on board. If you can provide me the data that suggests that you're in this. Right? And we get captive. Because the only thing that will unpack this rigid code about how God is with us is more data, right? We all know that's how God works. God provides us white sheets. We're going to do this and this and this, and then it's going to accomplish this, and here's the rationale, and here's the who, and here's the what and the when and the why. And I want you to think about it. And if you're okay with that, maybe God's going to do this thing. Right? Because God works for us. That's how we do it in religion. That's our first fundamental liability as practitioners of religion, is to get our roles wrong. And so what we've got here this week is another Copernican revolution. Guess what? You and I, we are not the center of the universe. We do not set its norms. We do not limit its possibilities. Our task is simply to be open and alive and aware of this God who does wondrous things, this God we've heard amazing stories about, who did wondrous things not just in the past, but who does those wondrous things today. And do we have the schema and the capacity to see it, to appreciate it, and to take the risk of getting on board with it? This story we've got today suggests we might, but probably not. It's really hard. See, because we run through all the reasons why this couldn't possibly be happening. That's what this whole story's about. And so what we get is the testimony of this one who can't make any better sense of it than anyone else, and all they can tell us is, you know, I was blind. You've known me my whole life. And all I can say is this. I don't know how. I don't know why. I don't know by what means, but I do know that I can see. That's all I know. That's all I know. And he and the God working through him is begging the rest of us to agree that is enough. That is all we need to know. Everything else we've created can be thrown away. Everything else we've created as a fundamental framework for how we kind of look for that God can be set aside, retooled to make sense of this new reality, because guess what? This living God shows up and surprises us. That's just the nature of God. We're in the season of Lent, and I've mentioned this, that the meta-narrative for the season of Lent, right, is captivity. Right, that we're captive in all sorts of ways. Right, the great meta-narrative of being captive to empire, which, if you watch this week, is a circus and was just wonderfully true. Right, that we're captive to this system that's big and kind of wild and crazy. Right, we're captive to that. We're captive to age and to everything that means. We heard that story a couple weeks ago. Remember, from Nicodemus. We're captive to the dangers of figuring it out once and for all, right? And of losing the capacity to dance or play jazz when God shows up. The liability of captivity to age. Last week we heard a little bit about being captive to social construct, right? Who's who to who? And how are we connected and how are we disconnected? And how am I going to make sure I understand you by putting you in this tight little box and making sure that you stay there so that I can stay here, and then we'll know how the world is mapped out, right? We're captive to that. This week we hear about captivity to blindness, captivity to closing off our discerning hearts from the God who still calls to us in new and amazing ways. And moving here on out, we'll hear about captivity to death itself, life in the tomb. We have all sorts of ways that we, as God's people, can be captive. And the warning this week is that when we're captive, we run the risk of taking God into the tomb with us, of limiting the possibility of God to be God. Right? Like a relationship, any relationship. We can't just crystallize and live in the same old roles we had 20 years ago when we first connected and fell in love. We are both living creatures. And so part of being in a living, loving relationship is learning how to stay soft and supple, staying open to the possibility of newness, of renewal. That is our vocation as God's people here today in this world. That is the warning to us today. Do not take God in the tomb with you. Burst forth. You be free and let God be free with you. During this season of Lent, we pay attention to all these captivities and the death that they sow not only in us, but in the world around us. We're invited during this season of Lent to reclaim our vocation as God's people, not simply to have a story to pass on that is tightly codified and makes sense, contained between two pages, transferable. What we're asked to do is to reclaim our vocation to live as people of wonder. Rather than judging the next manifestation of God's works in the world around us, what if we just took it in and wondered at it? That would be a radically different heart. It is that wonder that has changed this church profoundly over the course of my lifetime in it. It is that wonder that creates room in our lives together as Episcopalians for a new thing to show up. To have someone show up and say, I don't know what happened, but God showed up in my life. I'm going to ask you to set your codes aside because God showed up in my life and did a new thing. And I don't know how we're going to make sense of it together. I don't want you to be afraid. I don't want you to kick me out of here. I want us together to figure out how that is a sign not only of what God has always done, but what God is doing, what God will always do. God is looking for a partner. God is looking for a people who have fallen in love, who stay in love, who tend the relationship, who remain open to that love, leading us into new adventure. That's our vocation. Do you remember the God you first fell in love with? Do you still have those love letters? Do you remember the surprise? Do you remember being set free? Do you remember the lights turning on? Do you remember coming back to life? Amen.